answer. Someone to love is the answer. Once you found her, build your world around her. Make someone happy. Make just one someone happy. And you will be happy too.
Tony Bennett with Bill Evans at the piano, singing Julie Stein's Make Someone Happy. And we open that set with Frank Sinatra singing We'll Be Together Again. It's 6 minutes after four, this is Fresh Air, and you're tuned to WHYY 91 FM. One of the most difficult experiences for lesbians and gays is coming out to their parents. Many parents can't accept their child's homosexuality and think it's a sickness which the parent is responsible for. There's a support group for parents called Parents of Gays, and this group tries to dispel the myths and stereotypes about homosexuality and help parents understand their son or daughter's sexual preference. With me are two members of this group. Tom is the founding president of the Philadelphia chapter of Parents of Gays. He has a 21-year-old son who is gay. Ruth has been with Parents of Gays for about 2 years and has a 38-year-old gay son and a 34-year-old lesbian daughter. Members of the group use only their first name to protect their children's identity. Not all of their children have come out at work or to their landlord, and they could face housing or job discrimination or some other form of prejudice. I want to welcome you both to Fresh Air, and before we discuss your individual experiences with your own children, Tom, let me ask you as the founding president to just elaborate on the description that I gave of your group.
I think it's very active, very accurate. Our most important task in Parents of Gays is really to heal families. Parents, aunts and uncles, brothers, grandparents come to us. We meet once a month in Center City and or call on the hotline. And I think that healing a family, keeping a family intact, getting them to understand one another's positions and things of that sort is probably our most important task. And that's the thing that we work the hardest at.
How old was your son when he told you he was gay?
Well, he kind of told us through the back door, so to speak. He was 16 at the time that we found out. And we had been realizing, my wife and I had realized for over a year that he seemed very unhappy. Something was very difficult in his life, and it was making him very unhappy. If you had given us a list of 25 things that might have upset him, and put being gay on that list, we'd have put that at the bottom of the list because at the time he had a steady girlfriend, he was on the high school football team, and that was the furthest thing from our minds. We found out mostly because of the fact that he left a letter from a friend on his dresser one day, and when my wife was putting away the laundry and into his room, she saw this letter, and we were really getting desperate to try to find out what was going on in his life because we'd been a very close family, and suddenly we felt this enormous gulf between us. And as I said, it wasn't just the distance. It was the fact that he was very unsettled, and we had known him since birth, and suddenly things were changing in his life, and we couldn't get in touch with it. We then talked it over and confronted him about the letter, and he admitted that that was really at the core of this unhappiness.
How did he react? Was he shocked to find out that you knew?
Yes. I think, as I recall, being age 16 and being confronted by two adult parents, as I recall, I think he also probably felt guilty. After all, I mean, how else could he have felt, you know, as a teenager with an issue this large addressed by your parents? And we had to work out all those kinds of emotions and dynamics in the time that followed up then.
What was your emotional reaction after having confronted that letter and finding out that he was gay?
Well, I remember at the time that I first found out, I remember my knees were shaking. And I felt, I had a couple of feelings. I felt very guilty. My wife and I are the parents of two sons, and even though I felt, well, I was the role model, what kind of father was I? How could I have done anything so wrong was my initial thinking. And then I was also angry. I was angry because I thought at the time that this was something he had chosen. He was 16. I thought maybe it was a rebellious type of thing that he was into. It might have looked adventuresome as a 16-year-old to be more mature, maybe from his perspective. And that somehow or other this sense of rebellion was just a way of getting back at us for being parents. I don't think we had really done anything wrong in the process. And so I was angry. But that anger was a part of my misunderstanding. Even the word that you used in the introduction, sexual preference, I would have used that at that time because I would have thought that he would have had a choice. He would have preferred one sexual orientation over the other. Now today, as parents, we use the phrase sexual orientation because it's really not a matter of preference. He didn't choose to be gay. I didn't choose to be non-gay. To arrive at that point that you say, yeah, I think I'll do this for a while. No, I won't do that one, something of that sort.
But when you first found out that he was gay, you were upset and you thought it was bad.
Oh, yes, very definitely. My wife, who was a school teacher, spent most of that summer in tears. We kind of went into hibernation. We were not aware that there was a small cluster of parents in the city who met on occasionally at the time. There was not an organized group such as there is in existence now that publicizes and things of that nature. And we spent a whole year very much alone, very much wringing our hands and kind of looking at one another, wondering what are we going to do next, and working at it ourselves.
We'll pick up your story
again
in a couple of minutes, Ruth. I want to find out what your experience was like. You have two children,
yes,
who are gay and lesbian.
Yes.
How did you find out their sexual orientation?
I recently visited with my daughter out of town, and we discussed my being on the program, and she reminded me of what had happened. I've known for so very long that I'd forgotten really the circumstances, but she said that I forced her to tell me. My husband had had a heart attack, and I was able to locate my son, but I couldn't locate her. And I called the person she was living with at the time, and after a while, she finally did appear on the scene, and I was so angry, she said. I was so furious with her that she just had to tell me that she had been to a club, and that's when it all came about.
Were you shocked?
Truthfully, Terry, I don't remember. I really don't remember because I was concerned about my husband's health at the time. And actually, while we were having it was a marriage in which there were a lot of problems. And what my children chose to do was not the greatest of importance to me then. I felt that if this was what they wanted to do, if this made them happy, they were still my children and I still loved them. And let me get on with my life, and I more or less accepted. And that's as nearly as I can remember now. I've just been in the scene so very long with them.
What about your son?
I don't remember. He came out some months later, but I don't remember the circumstances other than that he was, it happened at the dinner table and he had a friend with him. But I don't remember much more about it than that. There were no arguments or recriminations on my part.
Did you know other gay people then?
I might have, but I'm not aware that I did.
Did it seem odd to you that both of your children decided to
I wondered. I didn't worry about it, but I did wonder sometimes, yes.
Did you ask yourself if you had done anything wrong like Tom said he did?
Yes, of course. Of course I did, because I had been very close with both children. We used to discuss all kinds of things, and I thought, well, somehow, there'd been an undue influence on one or the other. I used to think that perhaps because my husband was not active, with my son in any kind of fatherly, athletic way that fathers sometimes do, that perhaps that was the reason. But over a period of time, I just stopped thinking about it and accepted it.
If you're just joining us, I have two guests, Ruth and Tom, who are both members of Parents of Gays. Tom is the founding president. When you found out that your son was gay, what did the word gay mean to you?
I really can't with certainty reflect back on that, but I think that my general impression was what the media had conveyed to me that gay people were all about, and that was not a wholesome and healthy picture. That would be a myth and a stereotype that I had to overcome in learning about my son. And today I would almost say that that word to me reflects some wonderful people who we have come in contact with either through the group or through my son's friends, things of that nature. However, I wouldn't say that it's all wonderful, because there is a tinge of oppression there that we're also concerned about, too.
Had you known any gay or lesbians beforehand that you had any idea of what a real gay or lesbian person was like?
Yes, I had a friend, a friend who was gay, and he was very helpful in the process of talking to my wife and myself and helping us to understand.
Did you have anyone, Ruth, that you could talk to about your son and daughter, anyone who had been through it or who was gay or lesbian themselves?
No, but there is a very close family friend who has been aware, who'd been very close to us for many, many years, long before the children were born. And she has known from the beginning. She's been very supportive.
Were there people who you were wanted to talk to, but you were afraid to
approach? Of course, of course.
What was the fear?
The fear was that they would be critical about my children, that they wouldn't care to have anything to do with them, that they would be judgmental. And so you tend to not... You steer away from any possibility of this discussion.
You had said that you weren't upset when you found out that your daughter was lesbian and your son was gay, and you felt that whatever was best for them would be fine. But then on the other hand, you didn't know much about what that meant, because you didn't know other gay and lesbian people. Were you able to talk with your son and daughter pretty openly about what effect this was having on their life, what their life was like, and how it compared to a heterosexual life?
Yes, yes, we did. And they always brought their friends home. When they would come to dinner, they would bring guests. They would bring friends. And they took me to meet friends of theirs, other friends. They took me to, I've been to clubs with them. And they wanted to open up their lives to me so that I would be comfortable.
Were they surprised that you were so willing to hear about it and that you didn't want to disown them or anything, which is the experience that I think many children have with their parents?
Yes, I know. I know many young people who have had this happen to them. I think it's what they expected of me. It just happened naturally. I know that with others of their friends, I'm kind of a mother figure, because their parents have not been supportive and have not permitted their partners to visit in their homes. And I have been accepted wholeheartedly by them because I am supportive and understanding, and because it doesn't matter to me who the person is, what the person is, much more important to me.
Tom, did you let your son bring his boyfriends home when he was a teenager?
Well, many of his friends had been in and out of the house, not only male friends, but female friends as well, you know, for years. However, at that particular time, he had one friend. He had his special friend. And today, 5.5 years later, they are still together. They are still special friends to one another. We... initially, when Michael said he wanted us to meet Bill, we said, well, we're not ready for that. That'll have to wait. We've got some other things to get straightened out first before we meet this fella. Eventually, of course, the meeting did occur, and it was it has turned out to be an experience that we have said to Michael, well, we don't know for sure, you know, if you and Bill ever break up, that's fine. That's between the two of you, but we're not going to get rid of Bill. As far as we're concerned, he's still a part of our family, and we have since met his parents who live in Massachusetts, and Michael and Bill are good for one another and make each other happy, and we see somebody who cares for our son and wants only the best for him, and it's hard to deny that kind of a relationship. It looks very wholesome, and we feel very close to Bill.
What were you reluctant about before meeting him and meeting him?
Well, I think that we had to straighten out our relationship with Michael and get that again. One day, Michael was fixing breakfast in the kitchen, and I was sitting at the table having a cup of coffee or reading the newspaper or something, and I looked at the back side of him as he was scrambling some eggs, and I didn't verbalize it, only to myself mentally, and I said to that figure, I said, I don't know who you are, but I wish you would leave and my son could come back home again. And it was then that the powerful thing struck me that I had separated from him, that this information had taken me so far away from my son that I even could hardly recognize him. And even though he was there physically, emotionally, I had lost all attachment with him for a period of time. And that relationship had to be restored. That was the primary relationship that had to be attended to before I could worry about other things. And so it was a number of months later before we finally met. And it was much better at that time because Michael and I and my wife were conversing and were talking and kind of working on this thing. And this growing together had already started. So it was well that Michael and Bill took the time, you know, and allowed us that freedom.
I know what some parents go through is, if you're going to have a homosexual relationship, fine, but you won't do it in my house. Mm. You know, what you do outside, you know, I can't control that, but you're not going to bring them home. You're certainly not going to hold hands or kiss or sleep mm-hmm. together, anything under my roof. Did you ever think that maybe as a parent you could exert some control over your son's homosexuality, and that you could try to change it, you could discourage it, and maybe nip it in the bud and prevent him from really blossoming into an adult homosexual?
Well, I guess that what little I had read about changing that indicated to me at the time that did not seem to be, either for my wife or myself, a viable option, at least as I recall, with all the thoughts that were running around in my head at that time. That wasn't one that came to the forefront. I think that to some degree, even, you know, with our heterosexual son, I don't know that we really tried to guide to provide good values, to provide a good home, to provide those things. And I think that we did, by the way, for both of our boys. But there is a point as a parent that you can no longer control them. We could when they were 3 and 4. But ages 16, 19, 21, you've lost that control. And so we would have looked upon that as being rather futile, I think.
My guests are Tom. Did you want to say something?
One other thing, and that's the fact that Michael said that he knew that there was something different about him. This was, I think, one of the most interesting things that came across in those early months, that he knew that there was something different about him as early back as the fifth grade, that something was not at kilter with the rest of all of the media messages, you know, about drink a Coke and have a girlfriend and, you know, do all those kinds of things. And he said in seventh grade, it was in a sex education class at school, that the teacher in a very non-judgmental way, was going through, you know, definitions and things of that sort, and the word homosexuality came up for the first time because we had never talked about that in our home, and we thought we were wonderful parents, I mean, in terms of sex education. Well, I shouldn't say wonderful parents, but I think that we were trying to do as well as we were able. And he said, you know, when that word was defined in the seventh grade, it was like, he said, you know, lights started flashing and bells went off, because he found that there was a word that described a feeling that he had had that he hadn't had described in any other place. And he also began to realize that he wasn't alone, that somebody else must have had that feeling. And he left the class and almost as quickly as possible went to the library and started reading and to find out about this thing. So I think when he talked, or when you raised the question about trying to nip this in the bud, I think when we realized that this was an orientation that he had had early on, that we didn't look upon that as a viable option. And I think most psychiatrists would agree that that's not a viable option today.
Did you feel like he was trying to fool you by having a girlfriend?
Oh, yes, that was intentional. Yeah, he fooled. I mean, it was intentional. You don't want to go to high school today and admit that you're gay. You'll do anything, you know, to conform. So the girlfriend, I don't think, had any idea what that was the case.
My guests are Tom and Ruth, both members of the group Parents of Gays, and they only use their first names so as to not give away their sons and daughters' identities, who might face discrimination based on their homosexuality. Ruth, when you learned about your son and daughter's sexual orientation, did that cause you to think about how much it is about them you might not know?
Yes.
Because if you didn't know that, like, what else? Yes. What else didn't you know about their lives?
Yes, because in high school, my son dated. He went to his prom, and he dated in college. Certainly.
You seem to have taken this, you know, pretty well. You weren't terribly upset. You wanted to find out more. You were able to talk about it with your children. What did you join a support group?
Pardon?
What did you join a support group?
I had known about it for quite some time before I finally did, and I thought my reason at the time was possibly to be of help to other parents who were not as comfortable as I thought I was. And that essentially is why.
Did you decide that you weren't as comfortable as you thought you were?
Yes, I discovered there was an area that I had been having problem with, and that was with my daughter's orientation. And then I realized that it was not her orientation, but her. There was an unfortunate relationship that she had for quite some time that we had had problem dealing with. And when I discovered that, when I was able to be at peace with that, I felt better about it, much better.
Was dealing with lesbianism any different for you than dealing with homosexuality, male or gayness?
Yes, I think so, but only because my daughter has lived out of town for so many years, and I have not seen that much of her. I have not met that many of her friends. I have not been to that many places that cater to lesbians.
So you knew less about it?
Yes, yes.
Have you been trying to read books or anything like that?
I have, yes, but it's been more important just to try to reestablish the relationship with her and to understand where she's coming from and what's been happening to her, because she is now a single parent. I have a grandchild who's almost 5.5 years old.
Would you consider yourself an activist now?
Not really, only in the sense of being supportive in this group, of being interested in gay and lesbian issues, of supporting people who are interested in the same things that I am, writing letters when it's necessary.
You said you wanted to be of help to other parents who might find homosexuality more frightening, more problematical than you did. What are some of the attitudes you've been exposed to in Parents of Gays by newcomers to the group who just learned about their son or daughter's sexual orientation and who are offended or scared mm-hmm. by it.
Yes, very scared. Well, they feel a great deal of pain and they can't understand how their daughter, the parents I've spoken with specifically have been involved with daughters, how they could do this. And it just was inconceivable to them that as they thought they knew their daughters, this could happen.
And, well, Tom, you founded Parents of Gays.
No, not really. Okay. There was, prior to 1980, there was a small group of people who were meeting on occasion when they heard that there were some other parents who were willing to talk and so forth and so on, and they were meeting sporadically, I would say. And then in 1980, the Episcopal Community Services actually hired someone to do some counseling with gays and lesbians and with families. And it was through the Episcopal Community Services that our group really was organized and kind of coalesced and brought the other group in together and so forth and so on. And then we eventually elected officers and went through all that kinds of things. Go ahead.
What do you get from a support group?
I think the satisfaction of being able to help other people, the feeling that I'm doing something to make this world, to make this city, hopefully, a better place for my son and for other fine young men and women. After all, my son just graduated from Columbia in May of this year and is job hunting right now in the city. And I'm glad that the work that our group has been doing, as well as, you know, my own personal involvement, that whatever small victories have been made to enlarge understandings and to make this place a better place for him to be. I have two children, and neither of my boys have done anything wrong. I mean, you know, they are fine citizens to this society. They do and they will contribute to this community and make it better. And I have difficulty understanding why anybody would want to oppress one of my children, well, not the other, other than the fact that I suspect it has to do with a lot of their own fears, not my child's fears, but things of that nature.
How do you think your son feels about your involvement in this group?
Oh, I think he thinks it's okay. I don't. He is not an activist type. He hasn't been a member of any kinds of organization and things of that sort. He just he finished school with a very good, excellent point average, and so he just goes about his daily work and attends to the things that he needs to attend to, and you know, like these days, is out doing job interviews and writing letters and things of that sort, and he doesn't have a need to do that. I'd like to say one thing that Ruth mentioned too, and that's the fact that, or she hinted on it, and that is the fact that I think that now that we know as parents, I think our families are better off. I know it's a very difficult situation. It certainly was in our family. It certainly was in most families when you find out about your son or daughter. But now our relationship with our son is based on honesty. And prior to that, and prior to all these other young people who haven't yet told their parents, there's a lot of game playing that goes on. I wrote a letter to a young man last night in Boulder. A young man, he's 28 years old, and he just told his parents who live here in the area. And somehow or other, he got my name. And so he and I have talked on the phone, and then he's written a very extensive letter. And he feels so guilty, and he said, I'm in a no-win situation. And I pointed out to him the number of things that he did have favorably in his favor. And one of them is the fact that now he no longer has to come home from Boulder, Colorado, and lie to his parents. He no longer has to pretend that he's somebody who he's not. He's 28 years old. He's not a teenager anymore. And that now having this out in the open, although it's difficult and everybody feels bad or feels badly about it at this particular time, that at least an honest relationship in the family can be developed. And that's why I say we're better off. I wouldn't want my son to have moved off to Boulder, Colorado, or to Portland, Oregon, never to kind of come home again, and us always wonder what we did wrong, you know, to have him separate from us and never let us know.
His parents are in your group?
Not yet. I made the first contact. I mailed the letter to the mother today. He asked me to write her a letter rather than to call. So they might be eventually.
Ruth, how do you think your son and daughter feel about your involvement in Parents of Gays?
And they're delighted. They think it's wonderful, really.
Why?
Well, I never asked them specifically. I just was pleased that they were pleased. Our son came down with his partner to the group some months ago and was part of a panel. They feel, I suppose, that it's just proof of my acceptance and my support.
When they came out, how did you know who you could tell, who would be safe to tell that they were gay?
Well, you don't tell anyone in the beginning. You begin to have a feeling. You know that thinking people, sensitive people, will understand, and you can tell them. Within the last few months, I had occasion to tell two of my friends, and I had the most delightful response. It made me feel wonderful. One is a person with whom I've been friends for at least 10 years. I worked with her originally a number of years ago, and we've continued the relationship. And I was very distressed. We had been talking about my traveling, and I'm planning to go to Denver the end of September for the Parents Flag annual convention, and I'm very excited about that. And when I mentioned going to Colorado, she said, "Well, why are you going there?" And I swallowed, and I thought, well, I'm just going to tell her, and I did. She said, "I think that's great." And I looked at her, and we talked a little bit more, and then she said, "Well, my husband has a nephew who was a priest who's gay. He's no longer a priest. It doesn't mean anything at all. I think it's just wonderful." And the other friend I told, we've been friends for about a year and a half, said, "You know, I think I always knew." "Well, how did you know?" "I don't know," she said, "but I just always knew, and it doesn't make any difference."
Did you always have such good experiences when you told people?
These are the only, well, not really. I have told some family members who have been a little uneasy with it, and I have tried to explain about the group and answer any questions that they may have. There are still some family members who don't know, and to whom I would probably never say anything. There are some, I'm sure, who would be very negative about it, and you just don't discuss it with those people.
Why not bring it up and just let them be negative?
Pardon?
Why not bring it up and just let them be negative about it?
Yes, yes, there is that, excepting it depends on the individual and the way you're familiar with the individual's response to other things. You don't bring that kind of pain on yourself. It doesn't really matter because this is the way it is. It will always be this way. I'm happy with it. I'm contented. My children are contented. And it doesn't matter how this particular person feels.
Tom, how do you know who you can tell, or do you just tell anyone?
I think that my experience has been that you kind of send up trial balloons to people who you think that you might want to relate this to. Basically, it's nobody else's business about your child's sexual orientation or sexual activities or anything of that sort. I mean, parents don't go around talking about that to begin with. But sometimes with close personal friends, it kind of gets in the way. You feel as if you're keeping a secret from them. You feel as if you have to remember, now, what did I tell them the last time we asked? Did they ask that question, or was it somebody else when we were playing bridge who asked that question? You know, and you begin to start to wrestle with all these things, and when it starts to get in the way, you then at least I, you know, encourage people to say, well, maybe you need to reevaluate whether or not it needs to be kept a secret. At least let's raise it up to see about the possibility. We asked our son whether or not we could, in fact, tell some close personal friends, and he said yes. And so, with his permission, we have told personal friends. We've had nothing but full support. I think an interesting thing related to this was by keeping it a secret from my mother for 4.5 years. My mother said to me about 1.5 years ago, Tom, she said to me, something is happening with our relationship. There's a distance coming between the two of us, and I don't understand it. And I said to her, because she lives halfway across the country, oh, Mother, don't worry about it. It's just distance. We just don't see each other enough. She said, you know, this is 1.5 years ago or more than that. She said, you know, no, it's something deeper than that. She visited over the past Christmas holidays, and at that point the whole issue came out in the family, and she was marvelously, at age 74, marvelously understanding and accepting. In fact, she said this happened on a Monday afternoon. She was leaving on a Wednesday evening. She said, I want to go to New York tomorrow night and see Michael. I have to talk to him about this. And she was very supportive. She did not want to go back to the Midwest without talking to him personally after talking with us. But even that, keeping that secret from her in an important relationship after all that time, every time I was with her, I wanted to be able to say it, but I couldn't say it. I wasn't sure how she was going to react. And part of it is you're afraid that people are going to reject your own child, which is a horrible thing. And there's a lot of fear that they're going to reject you too. They're going to say, what kind of parent were you? How could you have let this happen? Why didn't you do this? You should have done that. I told, you know, and go on like that, things of that sort. So there's not only the fear of rejecting your child and also spreading gossip and things of that nature. We have some of our parents who live in neighborhoods in the Philadelphia area that are not, would not be very healthy and wholesome for them to announce at the neighborhood bar or something of that sort, you know, hey, I've got a lesbian daughter. I mean, there would be retaliation even to the parents, and some of the parents know that very well.
So some of your friends know and some of them don't?
I would say at this point, most of our close personal friends know, yes. Yeah, they know and are accepting, and our feeling is that if they can't accept our son under these terms, we had misjudged what we thought was a friendship in the first place. But we haven't lost any friends as a result of it. In fact, more often than not, people say, oh my gosh, really? Well, I think your son is great. I think your family's great. And, you know, he was our babysitter for years and things of that sort. And they're surprised. But
sometimes I think that every time groups of parents get together, that they all have one big secret about their child that they're keeping. And the range is they're about to get a divorce, things aren't working, to they're about to marry someone from a different religion or a different race or a different ethnic background.
Or their
to
child
they're
is
gay,
on drugs.
They're lesbian, they're on yep. drugs. There's always, I'm sure that every parent has a big secret.
It is unbelievable, but about 4 months ago, I was in Milwaukee at a professional group meeting with 5 other people who I meet with a couple of times a year. And we've been meeting together for years, just the 5 of us. And we eat at dinner almost at the same place all the time. And somebody let the first cat out of the bag over that dinner conversation, and every one of us went around the table and told our secret in the closet, and it was amazing. We just looked at one another, and we had all been there for so long, and every story was different. So you're right, that may well be the case.
Have you ever had that experience, Ruth?
No, I haven't, but I can see how it would be.
I'm speaking with Ruth and Tom, both members of the support group Parents of Gays, which, by the way, has a hotline number in Philadelphia that I should give you. It's 461-8197. That's 461-8197. What do you do when somebody tells a queer joke or a lesbian joke in your presence? You know, not knowing that your daughter's a lesbian or your son is gay. They figure, oh, you'll get a real laugh out of this. Well, how do you react?
Actually, I have not been in many circles where this has happened other than in my son's circles with him and with his friends. And it always amazes me how they tell jokes on themselves. They get a big bang out of them. But I have not been in other circles where it happens. I don't have a very wide circle of friends. I'm a single person. I don't socialize a great deal other than with my friends, with my family. So this is not too often a problem for me.
But you, Tom, have you experienced that?
Well, I've experienced it at three levels. The first level, early on into this whole process, I sat in kind of a seething rage and just became angry but remained silent. Then I progressed to the point where I would say, look, if this is another fag joke, forget it, I don't want to hear it. It really turns me off to listen to that kind of stuff. And I would say that I've said the same on racial jokes and things of that sort, so that people who knew me saw a degree of consistency. The final stage that I arrived at, and I still don't know what the inspiration was one night I was sitting in a bar in California, I think it was, and somebody started on one, and all of a sudden I said, if this is a fag joke, I don't want to hear it because I love somebody who's gay. And the conversation stopped dead in its tracks, and nobody had the nerve to ask me what it was that I was talking about until privately in the next couple of days, one or two people came up to me and said, what did you mean by that? You know, but it certainly stopped the conversation, and I didn't have to listen to any more of that. And it is true. I do love somebody who's gay.
How were you treated in the bar after that?
I really don't remember. I don't remember. I think I was so surprised at myself, mm-hmm, that I had said that.
Would you say that again?
I have said it. Yes, I have said it, uh-huh. And it's now a standard part of my repertoire. It does bring the conversation to a halt and send it off in another direction.
Ruth, what advice would you have for people who want to come out to their parents? You've experienced this twice with your son and with your daughter. And it's really one of the most possibly traumatic experiences for people who are gay, that moment when their parents find out or they tell their parents. What do you think people can do while telling their parents that might make for a kind of smoother reconciliation?
Well, tell them they should, if at all possible. I certainly believe in that honesty because, as we've discussed, it does away with the need for playing games. And the person who's involved has the right to have his parents' respect and love for him or her as an individual. And they should be caring and sensitive to the parents' possible hurt, disappointment, lack of understanding, should be able to suggest books that they can read. Many times I'm sure the parents wouldn't even be interested in reading anything. It would be just such an emotional reaction. But if it's at all possible, and the children certainly know their parents, whether they can accept that information, I think they should know.
I'd like to add, in addition to Ruth's comments, two other things that I think might be pertinent to that point. Our parents group has put together a booklet called Read This Before You Come Out to Your Parents, and it's just a 16-page booklet, and they could get that by anybody could get that by calling our hotline number, and we would be glad to mail it to them. The other thing that we do is the third Sunday in November annually, we conduct a coming out workshop for young men and young women who want to consider whether or not to come out to their parents. And we don't say that everybody should. We've never said that, because there are certainly circumstances where people are better off by not telling their parents. But if they want to consider the option as to whether or not to do it, and if they've already decided that they do want to tell their parents, then we conduct a workshop on a Sunday afternoon in Center City. It'll be November 18th this year. It's a 3 or 3.5 hour workshop led entirely by parents, explaining their experiences to try to give them hints as to how to do it, because we feel that it's a family affair. And again, as I said in the beginning, we're in the process of healing families. We want to make the process go as smoothly as possible for everybody involved. And even though we're a parents group, we feel that if we can get to the young adults before they get to their parents, that we're even helping that process and making it a little smoother.
What are some of the things you recommend against for someone who's going to be telling their parents?
Well, the list, there are 10 or 12 different things, but if you are entirely dependent financially on your parents, in other words, if your college education is dependent on them and you're at all in doubt, then you probably are better off waiting if that's an option that you have.
Do you think a parent would say, if you expect me to put through
college, that's an initial response with some parents, and they still have that power over their child, I think, at that point, and they're willing to use that. The person ought to have a support group or a support person to fall back on. They ought to know for sure whether or not that is their sexual orientation. If they're at all in doubt, this is not the time to be going home and telling your parents, I think I may be, well, maybe I'm not, I'm not sure, because you need, that just adds to the family's confusion. There's a whole variety of things in the pamphlet, has it. One other important thing that I think I do need to get in, and that's the fact that we're not just a Philadelphia group. We are over 110 parent groups across the country, and four other groups are right here in the Philadelphia area. There is a group in Allentown, one in Reading, one in Cherry Hill, and a fourth one just getting started in Wilmington. And all four of those parent groups can be contacted through our hotline. If they were to call our number, 461-8197, we would be glad to then tell them if they wanted to get in touch, or if they wanted to know about if there's a parent group in Seattle or Spokane or places like that. We have all those phone numbers.
What suggestions do you have for parents who have recently found out that their son or daughter is gay or lesbian?
I think my advice would be, don't sit all by yourself and brood over this thing alone. Get in touch with other parents who have the same feelings that you do, who have the same questions, who are struggling with the same. And I think in that way we're very much a typical self-help group. We're all volunteer. We have no staff. We are just parents and family members helping one another. And we take parents or family members wherever they are in whatever stage of the process, and are willing to work with them and to listen and to dialogue with them. We don't have a goal that they're all going to arrive at a certain point and come to full acceptance and true loving thing, whatever. Our real goal is to make sure that the family stays intact and to keep them at the process of dialogue, to work at an end result that's comfortable for all of them, for that particular family.
It sounds to me like the group is more family-oriented, but not political. You know, that it's not a lobbying group for civil rights legislation or for picketing or boycotting or mm-hmm. whatever. Is that a conscious choice on the part of the members?
I think that we do play a very low profile in terms of politics. We did, one of our members did speak to the city council a couple of years ago on the civil rights bill that was to be amended, because it directly affected our children, and I wanted both of my sons to have the same rights in the same city. So, yes, we are the parents and families. That's our primary focus.
Ruth, do you feel fully reconciled to your children's sexual orientation, or is there anything that still makes you uncomfortable?
No. I wouldn't change anything at all, other than that I would prefer that society felt differently. I would prefer that there would still not be people they would have to be careful about, and certain people knowing. No, I'm comfortable with them and with their choices, with the situation. Yes. I feel very much a part of the community because of my relationships with them and with other young friends of theirs who have since become friends of mine, whom I, in fact, have visited in other parts of the country.
What about you, Tom?
We have a speakers bureau that sends out speakers, and oftentimes that question comes up. They'll say, well, wouldn't you change your son if you could? And I think initially I would have probably said yes. Now I say, well, if I had a magic wand and could make the change, I would change society, because my son, and not only my son, I speak my son. I speak of all the other parents who I've met and their sons and daughters in the group, as well as in the Philadelphia and certainly in this area, the fine young men and women who do represent the gay and lesbian community. They really make a very rich contribution to this community. It's just unfortunate. I think if every gay and lesbian person tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock could open up their closet and burst forth out of it, we'd have an end to all of this nonsense. Because everybody would look around and see that it's in their family, it's next door, and all these people who they've loved and respected for all these years, that it's all around them, and that, my gosh, it's you? Oh, well, you know, had you told me that 10 years ago, it wouldn't have made any difference, things of that sort. So, yeah, I wouldn't change him either.
Okay, I want to thank you both very much for discussing with us this afternoon, for being so candid with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And I've been speaking with Tom and Ruth, both members of the Philadelphia chapter of Parents of Gays. It's a support group, and they do have a hotline number, which I'll give to you. It's 461-8197. That's 461-8197. And they can also inform you about the location of similar support groups in different parts of the country. Tom, let me just ask you, say someone who's lesbian or gay is listening now and they want to put their parents in touch with the group. Is this a typical habit of yours that you'll write letters to to a parent and approach them?
Yes, or even have the parents call us. Sometimes we get telephone calls from Phoenix, Arizona, you know, saying, well, my son said to call. And we say, well, that's great. We're glad to talk to you, but why don't you talk to the parents group in Phoenix and things of that sort? Yeah.
Okay, and their hotline number again is 461-8197, and I've been using only the first names of my guests today. The members of the group keep their last names confidential so that they don't reveal the identity of their children who might face discrimination on the job or in housing, etc., and not all the children of the parents in the group have officially come out, or at least come out to everybody. So the group again, Parents of Gays, the phone number 461-8197. It's 3.5 minutes to 5 o'clock, and we'll be joining National Public Radio at 5 for tonight's edition of All Things Considered. I'll tell you what's happening tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air after this report from Shadow Traffic.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Jam conditions right now for motorists heading home on I-95 northbound from approaching the Penn's Landing area through the Betsy Ross Bridge, about a 40-minute delay there. Now, at the Betsy Ross Bridge, the two left lanes are blocked for construction. Average speeds in the backup are 5 to 10 miles per hour, and there's no real good way to get around it. Lots of folks are getting off and taking Delaware Avenue. That is not a good alternate at this time, as that's getting backed up as well at this hour. Northbound on the Roosevelt Boulevard, also very heavy from approaching Broad Street through the 9th Street area, where the inner drive is barricaded due to a partial road cave, and stick to the outer drive there. That's Shadow Traffic for WHYY 91 FM. This is Jim Battelise.
That Shadow Traffic Report was funded by Philadelphia Electric. Tomorrow afternoon on Fresh Air at 3 o'clock, we'll be joined by Maurice Perez, who is the music director of the American Music Theater Festival production of the Gershwin's 1927 musical Strike Up the Band. He was also the music director for the recent revival of the Paul Whiteman 1924 arrangements. So that's all coming up tomorrow afternoon at 3 at 3:40, rock critic Ken Tucker's Hearing Secret Harmonies. And at 4 o'clock, we'll be joined by Jim Brown, director of the Parkside Development Corporation, which renovates inner-city apartment buildings and uses them for private low-income housing. And at about 4:30, we'll be joined by Leo Brooks, the managing director of Philadelphia. So that's all coming up tomorrow afternoon. I remind you that the Best of Fresh Air has moved to a new time, Sundays at noon. And this Sunday at noon, we'll present an interview with artist Frank Stella. There is a retrospective of his prints now on exhibit at the Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts. Well, that's about it for this afternoon's program. Fred Snyder was the technical director, production assistance from Jeff Foreman. Maeve McGorn is the associate producer, Danny Miller the co-producer of the show. My name's Terry Gross. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great evening. Thank you. This is WHYY-FM in Philadelphia, where listener-supported public radio in the Delaware Valley. Stay tuned now for All Things Considered.
Good evening. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm Susan Stamberg.
And this is Noah Adams with All Things Considered.
The hurt is that it's going to go away. There will be nothing left good, nothing lasting that is really going to benefit the ordinary person in the community. It's all going to go back to business as usual. Lack of business as usual.
The Olympics bringing refurbishment to Los Angeles. Tonight on All Things Considered, some Angelenos angry that the fix-up is just cosmetic.
And these stories, Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov reportedly receiving mind-altering drugs by force.
Questions about research that led to FDA approval for aspartame, the sweetener.
Blue Cross Blue Shield rates coming down in Iowa.
The cost of shoelaces in Claremont, New Hampshire.
And the death of American composer Randall Thompson.
Now news.
This is Brian Naylor. The environment and the Reagan administration's concern or lack of it was debated today by the White House and conservation groups. The occasion was the first day of a three-day election year environmental offensive by the president. Mr. Reagan traveled by helicopter to Tillman Island in Maryland's Chesapeake Bay, where he promised action to clean up the important crab and oyster fishing ground. But a week after his appointment of former EPA Director Ann Burford to head of federal commission, Mr. Reagan faced questions about the sincerity of his environmental beliefs.
We kind of, I think, took the lead in California when I was governor in the nation in the environmental movement. And this has always been a great interest of mine. And I just have to say, for whatever clue it might give you, I think that's been one of the best kept secrets about me and this administration.
Conservation groups, however, took issue with the president's stated concern for the environment. William Turnage is executive director of the Wilderness Society.
This administration is responsible for James Watt and Ann Burford. Indeed, the president just brought Ann Burford back. And yet he goes around and for 3 days of Hollywood hype, visits a wildlife refuge, visits a park, signs a report. These are meaningless, empty gestures.
The president brushed aside questions today about the Burford appointment, and when reporters persisted, White House spokesman Larry Speake stepped between Mr. Reagan and the cameras. Soviet physicist Andrei Sakharov is undergoing forced drug treatment in the closed city of Gorky, according to sources quoted by UPI and Sakharov's family in the United States. The sources say Sakharov has been undergoing treatment with mind-altering drugs for the last 6 weeks and that Soviet authorities hoped he would soon sign a declaration to be published in Soviet newspapers. Sakharov was exiled to Gorky in 1980 after criticizing the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. He has not been seen publicly since shortly after he reportedly began a hunger strike in early May. Federal investigators say the captain and crew of an Air Canada jetliner used bad judgment in a fire that killed 23 passengers last summer. A staff report of the National Transportation Safety Board concluded that the captain of Flight 797 should have decided to make an emergency landing at least 3 minutes before he did. 18 passengers and 5 crew members narrowly escaped the smoke-filled burning DC-9 moments after it landed in Cincinnati last June. The staff report said that the captain did not land immediately.